Atlanta Life Radio Station, WALR, bringing you the best in talk radio.
Thank you, Mel D. Well, I believe that the Lord is saying that this is the year of breakthrough, and I hope that all of you listening are believing for yours today.
To be the very best I can be.
There we go.
And it's up to you to do the same thing too.
Atlanta Life Media.
Well, good morning. A little bit of a delay there, but I believe that the Lord is saying that this is the year of breakthrough, and I hope that all of you listening are believing for yours today. Thank you for tuning in and joining me for this week's episode of Up to Me Radio with my special guest, Neil R. Beller, Jr. I'm your host, Gabby G., and if this is the first time you are listening to the program, my mother used to call me Gabby Gale as a little girl because I was born with the gift of gab, a trait that both my husband and son can each attest to. But I say that's okay because I believe that once greatest weakness is also one's greatest gift. So if you like to talk a lot like me or you're just a great listener, please join me in my virtual Gabby G Cafe and be inspired along with me because we have one very inspirational and creative guest for you this morning. Each week, I will welcome our guest and invite you to join me in conversations on various topics that relate to our journeys in awakening and living in our life purpose. I'm blessed and humbled to be a part of this Christ-led team, and I do not take this opportunity to serve as your host for granted. We will also have a very special segment in our show for you to share your Up to Me moments when you faced your reality, found your courage, and made a decision for action to make a change in your life. Here at Up to Me, we love to encourage and empower each other to be the best that we can be. So this program is truly meant to be a platform of voices to be heard and expressed in a safe and non-judgmental environment. I cannot express that enough. Please don't feel shy about participating in our program. We really do want to hear from you. I also want to express a special thank you to Mel D., Allie Ward, and the entire Atlanta Life Media team, and to Blessed Love Gospel Reggae Band for creating our theme song, Wake Up. You can hear the song in its entirety at the close of our show, and if you like it, please let me know by sending me a message on our new Facebook page. Send it to Gabby at Atlanta Life Radio, WALR, and in a future show, we will provide you with the details of how you can purchase the song. Also, we're now on iTunes, so please feel free to subscribe to our Atlanta Life Radio podcast channel. Simply download to our free Apple Podcast app, search for Atlanta Life Radio, select and subscribe. If you want to join me in today's discussion, please call in now to get the on-air cue at 347-324-5246 and press the number 1. Then hold on and enjoy the show, and we will bring you on air shortly. You know, I personally believe that each of us possess the ability to be creative, as we were born in the image of our Creator, Almighty God. So I decided to Google the word creative. The British Dictionary defines the word creative as an adjective. 1, having the ability to create. 2, characterized by originality of thought, having or showing imagination, a creative mind. And dictionary.com describes it this way, having the quality or power of creating. With that, I think we can agree that it is humanly possible within all of us to be creative, powerful, and also imaginative. The difficulty, I think, is sometimes knowing how to tap into our creativity, how to couple that with our passions and God-given talents to design or carve out a life that we can support ourselves and our families with and love what we do every day. I think that, to me, is the ultimate meaning of success, and it's the reason why I invited my very special guest to share his creative wisdom and experiences with us this morning. He's someone that I have literally known all my life since elementary school in Kearney, Maryland, and he comes here today on his own merits. He is an Emmy Award-winning editor and writer working with such network news and radio stations in Baltimore as WJZ TV 13 and as radio host of WBAL 1090 Radio. He has won 2 Associated Press Awards for his weekly children's radio feature, Ask Natalie, and is the author of 2 best-selling books, Cooking Without a Conscience, and his more recent hilarious tell-all book, Missing Pine Park. He is the owner and president of his award-winning production company, Kit and Caboodle Productions, a rare medium well done, and his secondary and equally successful medical video company, The Beller Group. Combined, they service highly visible clients such as the Baltimore Orioles and Ravens, Johns Hopkins University, and clients as far away as Melbourne, Australia. Most recently, he is an inspirational keynote speaker for colleges and universities, such as his own alma mater, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, or UMBC. Please help give me a very great and warm virtual welcome to Mr. Neil R. Beller, Jr. Good morning, Neil.
Well, good morning there, Gabby G.
How are you?
I feel like I should do a mic drop right there after that introduction. It was like, there's nothing more to say. Drop the mic, walk off the stage. I'm done.
Well, that is all your credentials wrapped up in one. And so actually, that's the very first thing that I wanted to pick your brain about this morning. It's how in the world does one person in only half of his lifetime, not just their lifetime, but in half his lifetime, begin the journey to accomplish all that you love? I mean, because as long as I've known you, and I know I've said this to you before, but you are one of the very few people that I know who has literally accomplished everything he's ever set out to do in his life, and you've done it in half your lifetime. So tell us about your early years and how you combine your passions into a resume of success.
Well, it's interesting. You know, everybody tries to figure out where they're journey is headed or what they're made out to be. And you touched on something in your introduction about creativity. I've always thought that everybody is a genius at one thing. They might not know what that thing is. You
right.
could be an amazing tuba player, but you've never picked up a tuba and tried. Therefore, you never know. You always hear about people who they don't find their passion finds them. I, at a very early age, had all of that happen to me. I realized that I had a sense of humor, that I could make people laugh. Therefore, I started immediately experiencing something called creative embellishment, like we know what that is. I became a storyteller. I would add all kinds of stuff to make the situation sound much better than it actually was. And even if it was in my own mind, if I had a horrible day at school, I mean, think about it, Gail, where Kearney Elementary, you get an E on a test, you come home, and you don't own it. The first thing you say is, well, everybody did bad. You know, it's one of those types of things where, so I had a way of taking that failure and kind of turning it into a positive and trying to work forward, even if I was doing it in my own head. And a lot of that, it was the creativity. And we'll talk about it a little bit later about my book, but I was going to point out one of the first things, and it's a story in my book. My dad worked at a company called EJ Corvettes. And
oh, he did?
Yes, he worked there for years and years and years. And at the time, I didn't know what that was, and EJ Corvettes is kind of like a, you know, a Sears and Montgomery Ward type of store.
Right.
And one day I heard my dad telling my mom that he had sold like 40 chairs to a local hotel for their pool, outdoor chairs. So in my mind, I'm thinking, Dad's a chair salesman. So the very next day, we were at school, and the teacher starts going around the classroom, and of course, we were all sitting alphabetically, and of course, I'm Beller. So I'm right in the front row next to Barry Ann Kobiak and Lynn Emrine, and I'm thinking, all right, she's gonna get to me, number 3, and she says, class, I'm going to go around the room, and I want to know, what does your dad do for a living? And it was like one of those, in my head, I heard that, dun-dun-dums, like, oh my God, you know, Dad's a chair salesman. I can't say that. So I can't remember what Lynn's is. I think Barry's was a fireman, and it was like, you know, ooh, ah. So she gets to me, and she says, you know, what does your dad do? And I tell them what my dad does, and everybody's like, wow, you know, that's awesome. And so later that night I get home, and my parents take me into the back room, and they were like, Mrs. Branham, your first grade teacher called today. And I'm like, yes. Said, wants Dad to come in and talk to the class about what he does for a living. And I said, are you? And my father looks at me and he goes, I don't know too much about being a lion tamer.
You did not.
Oh, I totally did. The circus was in town, so I thought, okay, Barnum and Bailey, Dad's a lion tamer. So she wanted him to come in and talk. And so, you know, I was six, and that's when I realized, wow, you know, I got this gift of exaggeration and going in a different direction. So that was how I would deal with things on a funny level. I never, you know, I never did anything to cause anybody harm.
Right.
But I got to the point where there was things I wanted to do, and my dream in life was baseball. I wanted to be a professional baseball player. The Orioles of my youth had an amazing team, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, Boog Powell, all these Hall of Famers, Jim Palmer. And so I just took it upon myself that that's what I was going to do, and I was going to be a baseball player. And everything else I did in my life led up to me being a baseball player. And that was my motivation. And that is why, actually, I even went to college, was strictly to play baseball. That was my major. And when you're talking about, you know, the creativity, there's this great movie that was in the 80s that I really felt closely to. Character Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler were in a movie called Night Shift, where they worked at a morgue overnight, and they decided to make the best of it, and they literally turned it into a brothel so they could make, you know, more money at night. But the character Michael Keaton carried around this tape recorder, and he talked about how creative he was and how he could not stop ideas from just flying into his head at any given moment. Something creative would hit him and he would have to record it. And at that moment he turns on the tape recorder and he says, feed mayonnaise to tuna fish. And he goes, call Starkist in the morning. And he just turns it off and goes on about his life. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's me. You know, you're trying to get rid of the middleman. Instead of waiting till later to fix the, you know, mix the mayonnaise in with the tuna fish out of the can, just feed it right to the tuna fish so it's in their system. And that's how I think sometimes. Things hit me and I can't control it, and I just try to figure out, okay, where do I go with this? Of course, I'm not calling Starkist, and my ideas are never that wacky.
Right.
But, you know, and in our lives, we come across people who touch us in certain ways that lead to that motivation, and you, my friend, are one of those people. And I'll tell you why. Many times when I was in school and you were in my classes for 12 years off and on,
right,
if I sat there befuddled and I didn't understand something, if I waited long enough, Gail would raise her hand and ask the question that I was wondering. You were the best hand raiser on the planet.
I loved being the center of attention.
It was like, I don't understand, but if I wait long enough, Gail will ask the question. And sure enough, there's her hand. I'm like, phew. So you saved me on
shy,
many occasions. I wasn't
shy, let's put it that way. Oh, my goodness, that is so funny. Well, you know what? Have you found that you had obstacles that you had to overcome in that? Tell us about what happened when you were 18, because I think that's important for people to know.
Well, when I was 18 years old, I was just getting out of high school, and we found out my dad had cancer, and my father was only 45 years old.
Wow!
And in your mind, when you're younger, your dad's going to be alive forever. And
exactly.
In 4 months, we lost him.
Mm.
It happened so fast that the family literally was like, oh, my gosh, what happened? And we were just totally, totally blindsided. And my mom had four children, and she was a widow, and she was only 38. My mom and I are 20 years apart. And so it really hit the family hard. And my dad used to have this saying that, if you can't face the day, back into it. And I always thought about that, because there's many times we'll hit an obstacle and some people feel like they just have to hit this thing head on and deal with it and struggle through it sometimes. But my dad had a way of looking at things that you would just back into it, just baby steps, just take it, take a bite off and chew it a little bit instead of trying to swallow the whole thing. And that was my approach. I decided that I needed to back into it. And everybody, of course, is in charge of their own happiness and how they deal with things. Well, other people in my family didn't deal with it that way, and there was all kinds of struggles, and I ended up getting asked to leave the house. So when I was 18, I was on my own, and the family kind of split up, and I moved to another town and ended up moving in with my grandparents, who were absolutely wonderful, literally just handed me a key and said, "You're welcome anytime," and I moved in, and I ended up living there for about 6 or 7 years. And that really transplanted in me first an openness that I was like, wow, they really, this is going to be okay. I have, you know, a roof over my head. But I was 18, and I needed to attack the world. I needed to go out and get my job. I needed to do what I was going to do to survive and eventually, you know, have my own children. So I paid for myself to go through college. I got a part-time job. I was actually a cook at Bob's Big Boy, which was a restaurant. And I was, because I was so busy at school and baseball, that I would work Fridays and Saturdays from 5 at night till 5 in the morning. So I could get 24 hours in 2 days. And so weekends were literally, you know, I was just slinging pancakes and everything else that I needed to do, and then I would go to work all week. I would go to school all week and then play baseball. So I had a drive that I still wanted to get accomplished. I still saw at the end of that line my goal, and I always set goals. I have a list every single day. I have a list of 10 things that I want to get accomplished. And a lot of people will look at the list at the end of the day and say, wow, look at that. You got 9 things done. That's amazing. I could never have done that. But to me, I almost see that as a failure because I didn't get that 10th one done. I always, always strive to do more. And that has bled over into my business and how, you know, I run my life. And a lot of people have told me that I get more accomplished than anybody they've ever met because I'm good at multitasking. But it's a inner drive. It's, you know, you want yourself, you want to be proud of yourself, but you want others to be proud of you too. And then also you get to a point where you realize that other people are looking up to you and they want to hear how you accomplished it, which is, you know, the goal of the show right here.
And it is, and that's why I wanted to have you on as guests, because you're a perfect example of that. And also, I'd like people to know that even though you are a success and you have accomplished all these things in such a quick period of time, it's important that I think that, and that's just the reason I wanted you to kind of share what you've had to overcome, because in our journeys, you don't go from A to Z without struggles and setbacks. And I think it's important for people to hear how you've been able to, like your dad said, to find your own personal way to deal with those setbacks,
mm-hmm.
and find a way to move forward from there, because you can get stuck when you're discouraged things like that happen.
That's absolutely true. And along that journey, of course, there's all kinds of other little journeys. And mm-hmm. you'll be kind and disagree with this, but I was a fat kid. I had a weight problem my entire life, and when I got to high school in the 10th grade, I went and lost 53.5 pounds to make the baseball team. Now, I was always very athletic, and I could always play ball, but I was always that husky kid. Mom had to drag me to Montgomery Ward's to the husky department to get my Wrangler jeans, and I always... You know, my life was judged around what belt loop or notch in my belt that I was, you know, putting my pants on. I always, always, always had a weight problem. And even baby steps there. I remember one day I went to this outfit called, I believe it was called Diet Workshop. And it was me and like 300 mothers. And
oh,
I was,
you're kidding.
No, I was 16 years old, and I would, and this was the type of place that you wade in front of everybody, which, you know, would almost scare the weight off of you. And I was losing weight very rapidly, and in 1 week I lost a half a pound. And I was so discouraged, and I was like, ugh, half a pound, that's nothing. And I remember this lady took me aside, and she says, I want you to go to the grocery store, and I want you to pick up 2 sticks of butter, because 2 sticks of butter is a half a pound.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that you know, and I did that. And I went and I looked at it, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty amazing. I never would have thought that that's how many, you know, sticks of butter. So I ended up losing 214 sticks of butter.
So wow.
My whole life came down to a butter measurement at that point.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah, so
because you know what that just what that teaches you and teaches everyone is it really is the way you look at things, the way you allow your mind to go. So you have to put that positive twist on things so you don't get stuck. And so and you've done that, like you said, since you were a little kid. When you got that E on your test, and then you were able to say, you know what, I'm not the only one that did bad on that, so obviously it wasn't all me.
Right.
But, you know, I love that. You've always been a positive person, and I think that speaks for the success of your life and your businesses. And one of those that I wanted to talk about was something that I had not heard, because I always knew you loved baseball. I knew you loved to tell stories and write, but your one accomplishment that I was surprised you would be good at, but I was surprised because that was something that I was like, huh, I never heard that maybe he wanted to do that. And that was your guest hosting on the Sherry Elliker Show on WBAL 1090. So how did you begin your radio career? I didn't realize you wanted to be a radio host. Was that something that you honed in on, like your next thing on your list, or was just some happenstance opportunity that came about?
Well, it's amazing how sometimes things fall in your lap. And you've heard people say that, like, I had no idea I was going to do it, and something fell in my lap. I don't know that anything has ever fallen in my lap. I think I was put in a place to receive it. But because of my wacko sense of humor and how I used to always entertain and do stand-up comedy and stuff like that, I had that quintessential radio DJ voice, and I used to play around with that sometimes. And I ended up getting a job at UMBC on their radio station in their sports department. And I ended up working, and what you would do is you would do, you know, every couple hours you'd come in and just give a sports report or something, and then ended up becoming the sports director, and then I got my own show, and I fell in love with it. And the way I even started doing this was one day somebody said, well, grab the mic and talk like a DJ. So I went over to the mic, and I put the headphones on, and the thing just took over, and all of a sudden I was going, this is WUMD, you have Neil Belder here, we're going to go way back and listen to... And I started talking like this, and people, like, their mouths fell open. They're like, what is that? And I just thought it was hilarious. So I ended up creating all these different characters. I had a sports guy, Bob Fermison. I had a weather guy, Nesby Glimcher. And I just started doing all these different characters on my radio show. And I got a really big following at campus. And one of those people was this woman named Sherry Elliker. And Sherry actually worked at the radio station in the management, but she came down, and she was just a big fan of my show. And so one night I put her on, and we started talking, and we had this really, really good chemistry. And I ended up moving on, doing other stuff, baseball and television, and Sherry got into radio, and she had actually credits me with starting her career, which is wonderful. And she went on and had a wonderful career. She had her show on XM Radio and then on WBAL in Baltimore. She had a show, and she invited me to come in and be her guest host, and I just fell in love with it. I thought it was so much fun, so I was going in there with her. And there's a whole other interlude in the middle of this. When I was at college, one day I had some friends over, and we were playing cards, and somebody was out of the game, and they were sitting there reading a newspaper, and they were like, hey, there's this ad for this DJ. This company's looking for a DJ, like a wedding DJ. So call him up and play with him on the phone. And I'm like, no. And they're like, come on, come on, come on. So I was like, all right, all right. So the company was called Davis DJ. So
I remember them.
Well, so I call the phone, and I was all ready to launch into this, may I please speak to Bill Davis? And he was going to say, you know, well, hi, this is Bill. And I was, hey, Bill, my name's Neil Beller. And, you know, so I was going to launch into this whole thing. And Gail, he answers the phone exactly how I was going to talk to him. So,
did you die laughing?
Oh, so he goes, Davis DJs. And I was like, may I please speak to Bill Davis? He's like, this is Bill Davis. Hey, Bill, my name's Neil Beller. So you had in the paper, thought I'd give you a call. Hey, Neil, you sound great. And he hires me on the phone.
Oh, good Lord.
So now I got to go meet this guy. So he tells me to come to his house on Sunday. So I drive to Annapolis, and I knock on the door, and the door opens up, and I'm looking out, and then I have to look down. And Bill Davis is like 5'1". He was this tiny little man, and he's like, you must be Neil. And I'm like, yeah, hi, Bill. How you doing? And I shake his hand, and we go walking in. He's looking at me strange, and we're starting to have this conversation. He goes, you sound totally different than you do on the phone. And I said, I was making that up. And I said, do you talk like this normal?
Like,
and he goes, yes, I do. I talk like this all the time. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was just enthralled. I couldn't believe somebody's voice actually was like that. So
mm-hmm.
So whenever I was around him, I had to start talking like this. And I
ended up, he didn't mind that? Did he feel like you were making fun of him when you
No,
did
he didn't. He thought it was hilarious, actually. And I actually went out with him several times. And then I actually even worked it into a stand-up comedy routine that I did for years. And I had this bit where I thought it would be really funny if one day out of the year, for no reason at all, everybody changed professions for one day. And so I thought, what if you went to court and instead of having the bailiff, you had a game show announcer? And it would be Baltimore County District Court Number 12, like to ask Bob Permison to come on down. You know, Bob's
like
backyard
the
was stealing
right,
a
right.
new car, and you know, go into all this type of stuff. So I ended up using that voice for years and years and years, but totally out of fun. But that was his normal talk. So that actually led me into doing more radio and then getting on Sherry's show.
Well, we're going to hold that thought for a moment because we're going to take a short station break, and when we come back, we're going to have a special guest in the studio this morning. For which you won a 2-time Associated Press feature, and she's a precocious little 8-year-old named Ask Natalie. But right now we're going to take a short station break with Neil Beller, and we'll be right back.
This is Mel D, and on behalf of the Atlanta Life Radio team, we thank all of our faithful listeners. If this is your first time tuning in, we thank you. Please share us with a friend, and please come back. A special thank you to all of our financial sponsors, because without your financial support, this show would not be made possible. If you are interested in becoming a financial sponsor or want to learn how you can advertise with us, please send our station manager an email, message of interest, complete with your contact information to info@AtlantaLifeRadio.com. Again, send your contact information to info@AtlantaLifeRadio.com. And now we return back to our program. Gabby?
And we're back, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Me Radio. I'm your host, Gabby G. We're talking with inspirational speaker, author, entrepreneur, Neil Beller. If you would like to call in and be a part of our conversation, please call 347-324-5246 and press the number 1. Well, Neil, I believe that we have asked Natalie with us in the studio this morning, so I wanted our listeners to hear the product of your creativity, which won you a 2-time Associated Press feature. And Natalie's a pretty smart little cookie, and she's going to talk to us about school lunch.
Ask Natalie.
Natalie, I was in your school yesterday, and I saw you eating lunch.
Yeah, it sure was a special day.
I noticed that there was a table right next to your table that two other boys were sitting at. Were they in trouble?
No, that was the peanut-free table.
The peanut-free table?
It's the place where the people that have peanut allergies sit, because then somebody can still sit with them, but they can't have any peanuts with them.
Okay, like what other tables do you have?
If you notice, some kids were sitting at the lactose intolerant table.
You know what? I didn't notice. But I did see one little kid sitting all by himself.
Yeah, that's the independent table.
Well, what do you mean? Was he in trouble?
That just means he has no political affiliation.
Oh. And what about that one table that was way on the other side of the room all by itself?
Well, that was the flatulence table.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, those guys eat a lot of broccoli. Well, it does have vitamin C, you know.
Well, what other tables you have?
We have a low cholesterol table, a brown rice table, and a zero trans fats table.
That sounds like a lot of work for lunch.
Yeah, we only have a half hour.
Well, what do you eat for lunch?
Today I had some whole grain flatbread pizza, a nice tossed salad with a low-fat vinaigrette, but I did have some chocolate pudding.
Well, that sounds like a real healthy diet.
Well, that's because I was sitting at the healthy diet table.
What are you going to have for lunch tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'm going to have fried cheese sticks, a chocolate chip cookie souffle, and a 16-ounce Coke.
Oh my goodness, what table are you going to be sitting at tomorrow?
The Future Fat Kids of America table.
Natalie, you're silly.
That's perfect.
That brings back some memories.
I had the worst time trying to figure out which Ask Natalie I wanted to air because they're all so hysterical. I love the one about Alan Tipper Gore's divorce. I mean, she hits on like all the, you know, the major topics of the day, politics, just, you know, and silly things like school lunch. It's just, how do you come up with that?
Well, she was, you know, it's interesting how that started. That was 8 years ago, and it was during the first political run of Hillary Clinton. And Sherry and I were talking one day, and we said, you know what, maybe we should do a man on the street interview and just, you know, go out and ask people what they think about all this. And we were like, okay. So I came home with the equipment, and I decided to test it out on my five-year-old. And so I asked her one question, and I said, up until this point, the spouse of the president has always been a woman, and she's always been referred to as the first lady. I said, if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, Bill will be the spouse. I said, what would we call Bill? And she says, I know. And I said, what? And she goes, first lady's man. Well, I like, oh my gosh, I have lightning in a bottle. And so I just started interviewing her, and just to get, you know, a child's perspective. But Natalie was a little more plugged in than most kids, and the stuff that came out of her mouth was hilarious. At one point, Gail, she came in second for an Edward R. Murrow Award. They said they said she was the youngest news correspondent in the nation.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we actually, there's a great website called smellslikefoot.com.
Yes.
And that is that was one of her sayings. She said something, if it smelled bad, it smelled like foot. So we put them all on the website if you want to hear them. They're pretty hilarious. And that was a really fun feature, and people would tune in just to hear that. She became very popular for she became more popular than me. People would call in and want to know when Natalie was coming on. They didn't really care about me anymore.
Well, you know what? She's an extension of you.
Well, yeah, that's very true.
You know where she gets that from, but I remember you in the sixth grade as a great storyteller because you and I were in the storytelling club.
That's correct.
And in the sixth grade, and you were the president, of course, and but you were famous to me anyway. You know, because I always remember you saying this tagline, like in conjunction with the storytelling club. We would meet at the public library, and you would say, well, we're going to go to this place. I remember one time you were saying, we're going to go to Shepherd Pratt. And we're going to go to Shepherd Pratt. We're going to go to all the public libraries, and we're going to do this and that, and the whole kit and caboodle. You would always end with the whole kit and caboodle. And so I had to smile inside of myself with that personal memory when I found out that that was the name of your successful television production company, Kit and Caboodle Productions. So why that saying in particular is part of your early DNA and what Kit and Caboodle Productions does.
Kit and Caboodle, I was at one point thinking about going into business with a man who wrote music, and I was at the time shooting and editing, and so I thought, wow, we could call our company, and we were doing a lot of sports. I was doing some stuff for the Orioles and the Ravens, and so we were going to call our company Shoots and Scores, and I thought that was really clever as far as doing the audio and the video at the same time. And then he ended up going in another direction, and I was going to, my thing was that I did everything from script to screen. I would come up with the concept and write it and then produce it and shoot it and edit it and sometimes do the voiceover and the whole thing and all the way till it would air. And I was looking for something like that. And I said, well, I basically do the whole kit and caboodle. And I thought, that's it, kit and caboodle. So I've been using that term my whole life. And I thought,
you
well, that rounds out everything. So I started Kit and Caboodle Productions, and my tagline there was a rare medium, well done. And so that was, I started, I guess, doing television right out of college, even though while I was still doing radio stuff, I was trying to freelance and get into that. So I started my own company, and I've been doing it ever since. We do a lot of high-end corporate industrial videos. Started getting, like I mentioned, the Orioles and the Ravens, and one of my big clients was Broadway Across America. Just about every city in the nation that has a Broadway venue, we were doing all the commercials and the spots to promote the shows that were coming there. I mean, everywhere, Tempe and Omaha and New Orleans and Philadelphia and all these different stations, and that was a really, really wonderful client. And it changes every single day. And one thing I'll say to people out there is a major difference between having a job and having a career. And
yes,
I have a career. I love what I do. It's different every day. I'm not going to a job where I'm just trading hours for dollars. And I think everybody needs to find that in their life. And sometimes you have to do the job to get by until you find your career, find that thing that you're in love with, whether it's the tuba player that we mentioned before or television like myself.
So do you have any tips for people to how they can transfer their passion into, you know, a job that actually supports them and love what they do every day? That's a trick. I mean, that's
it is a trick. And finding something that you love and being successful at it and, you know, feeding your family is, you know, the major goal. And you've heard all of this, you know, thinking outside the box type thing. I'm not even near the box. I'm one of these people that I'll look at a situation, and people need to think this way, and it's difficult at times. And I'll give you an example. We went to spring training several years ago with the Baltimore Orioles down in Florida. It was early April, and if not late March. And I was down there with all of the advertisers that were going to advertise for the Orioles. At the time, I'd done some commercials. I wrote a campaign for a company called Easy Store Self-Storage that was very successful, and so they sent me down. And when we were down there, I was looking around, and it was palm trees, and it was just a beautiful venue. And I went to the head of sales for BAL, and I said, I have a great idea. I said, why don't we do all your Christmas cards? And he was like, what? And I said, we got this beautiful setup. I said, let's do your shout out to all of your customers for the year, and they'll know when they get this in December that you were thinking about them way back in March. And he thought, wow, what a great idea. So we set up the camera and we videotaped him saying, hey, you know, Apple Ford, thank you so much for all your support this year, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we went right down the line and we made these little tiny vignettes that he then sent to them on the DVD in December. And it was a big success. Now, in December, had they thought about it, there would be no way to go back down to Florida and do this. So I was thinking so far out of the box that we did something proactively, you know, 9 months before it was due. And I started thinking like that on many, many levels, many venues. And so I've learned to take my career and figure out where it's going before it actually ever gets there. And I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but if you think, okay, I got to get up, I'm going to put on my shoes, I'm going to tie them, I'm going to put on my jogging gear, and I'm going to go run. When I'm doing that, I'm not thinking about that anymore. I'm already thinking about what I'm going to do when I get done the run, what I'm going to drink, how I'm going to rehydrate, you know, take my shower and all that stuff. I'm always thinking 10, 12 steps ahead. And sometimes you have to do that so you're prepared for any adversity that comes up.
It gives you time to think through the box, actually.
Well, it does. It does. And sometimes, you know, creativity isn't always a positive thing. Think about these tragedies that happen to very talented people and comedians, you know, like Robin Williams. I mean, you have demons that you fight, and it's hard to fight them in your own head. And when you're very creative, those demons are much more powerful than, you know, other people's demons. And so you got to learn to be able to take care of those types of things in, because your creativity can be very negative. You know, there was a time years and years ago, I'd walk into a room, and if there was some girl crying, my first thought was, oh, my gosh, what did I do to upset her?
No kidding. And
that's
Neil.
Well, but that's the demon in you, because you're wondering, you know, that's not computing with what I was doing with my life, so why is this person upset? What do I need to do to change that? And one of the things that I did, and people used to think I was a nut job for it, I used to pay for everybody who followed me through a toll booth. So whenever I went to a toll booth, I would always pay for the person behind me, and I would just take off.
I used to do that, and also Starbucks.
Yeah, that's a big thing with Starbucks. I hear that a lot of time. People,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and it's done for me too as well. Someone did it for me not long ago.
And you don't know. Oh. You could be having a bad day, and
exactly
all of a sudden somebody
right.
goes, "Hey, you know what? That person in front of you, pay for him," and it's going to touch you differently. And
yeah.
So I used to do that until the government invented Easy Pass. then I couldn't do it anymore. But that used to be
right.
that used to be
oh
a thing. I used to just do that, and that was my thing, my way to give away. And the reason that even came about, Gail, was I had a very nice come to Jesus moment, I will say. When I was DJing, I was like 2 hours from home, and I miscalculated the money I had in my pocket and the gas that I had in my tank. And I was driving home, and I was below E, and I was still an hour and a half away. I had $1.46 in my name. It was like 2 in the morning. And I literally said out loud, you know, Lord, show me a sign. You know, help me out here. And I came over a hill, and on the other side of the highway, there was a gas truck filling up a gas station. The gas station was closed. And so I turned in the medium, and as I turned, I ran out of gas. So I pushed the car in neutral real quick and drifted and then got out and pushed a little bit into the gas station. I got out of my car. I walked over. I was holding my hands out. I had a business card in one hand and $1.46 in the other, and I walked up to this guy, and I said, I'm completely out of gas, and this is all I have. And he goes, the station is closed. And I said, is there any way you can help me? And he just looked at me, and he smiled, and he went to his truck, and he got out a 5-gallon bucket. And he put it underneath the truck, and he turned the big wheel, and he filled it up with gas, and then he handed me a rubber hose. And I walked
wow.
back over, and I siphoned it into my car, and I came back, and he did it again. He gave me 10 gallons of gas, and I went to give him the $1.46, and he said, no, you know, this is my gift to you. And I took down his name and address, and I sent him a Christmas card every year until he died.
Wow, you're kidding me.
No, and it was at that moment that I was like, wow, somebody did something really, really nice for me, and I need to pay it forward. And that's when I started doing the toll booth trick.
That's a fabulous story, and it's also, you know, that's a seemingly little thing, but it's those little things, because you don't know the impact that it has on people. And look what that birthed into all that.
You're
know,
right.
It's just one little kindness. Lasted a whole lifetime. Between the two of you, developed a relationship with this man, sent him a Christmas card. Now, I'm sure that blessed him every year he got that.
I can remember the look on his face, and he was like, it meant nothing to him. And I think about that a lot, and I'm like, wow, this guy, you know, he really didn't care, you know, what I was going through. He just helped me out, not knowing what you said, what it did for me. And I was imagining the worst possible things ever, and this man took all that away in a heartbeat, and it really touched me, and that's when I started paying it forward. And to this day, when I'm at a gas station and there's somebody standing next to me and they're pumping gas and I'm pumping gas and nobody's saying anything, I always talk to them. People think I'm a nut because I'll talk to everybody. And there's,
yeah, that's
there's no,
how I am.
Just to make them smile or make them laugh, or right. You know, I might jump into a crazy voice or, you know, whatever it is.
I think that's awesome. You know what? I want to talk about, because we're beginning to run out of time, and I want to make sure that we get to talk about your books, Missing Pine Park and Cooking Without a Conscience. Tell us about Missing Pine Park. That's your most recent one. And what was the inspiration behind Missing Pine Park?
Missing Pine Park was, when I turned 30 years old, I was living in California. I did, like you, I did the Hollywood thing for a while, and I had some great experiences out in Hollywood, but I was very homesick. And when I turned 30, I drew an aerial map of our neighborhood that I grew up in Kearney, and I labeled all the houses, and I numbered all over the map 1 to 30. And then along with that, I wrote 30 paragraphs that coincided with each number, and I sent it all to my mother. And each paragraph dealt with 30 things that happened in my life that my mother never knew about. The time
oh my
I
goodness.
Walked in on Mrs. Miller when she was sitting on the toilet, or the time I wet my pants and in disguise it jumped into Chapman's pool, and things like this.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
So I sent it to my mom, and it went around the family, and it was a big hit. And my my younger sister, Karen, she said, you know what, if you expound on these stories, you know, if you wrote 3 pages about each story, you'd have 90 pages. You know, you could have a book. So I sat down one day, and they came to me like that Toonies mayonnaise thing. I came up with 429 different events in my life that I remembered. And you and I have talked, Gail. I have an amazing memory. I remember lying in my crib, looking at my parents, looking at me.
No, in your crib.
I do. I am not kidding you. I remember holding on to the bars. I remember laying on the bottom step in our house inside with my feet against the wall and stretching my hands to try to reach the other side, which is only like 3 feet. I mean, I was little, but I remember all these things. So I wrote down all of these things, and I started writing stories on them. Every night I would just pick a topic and just start writing a story. And what I found out that there was 3 things that were going on. This book was about my it's a memoir, but it was about my love of baseball, obviously, and my desire to become that. It was about the experience that my dad had on my life. And it was also about growing up in a more relaxed time in
mm-hmm.
our lives. And
right.
I say relaxed because at the time we didn't know it was relaxed. I mean, if you remember, we
right.
had bomb scares. I mean, air raid.
I remember
drill.
The air raid scare. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
from
we had
culture.
To go out and, you know, put your head against the locker. And,
yep.
you know,
I remember
think,
that.
And I used to remember thinking, oh, if I crouch down like this and put my hands over my head, I will be safe in a thermonuclear war. It
yeah,
was a different time, but
it was
also a time where you would leave the house at 7 in the morning and say, I'll see you at dinner. And,
right.
you know, parents would say, all right, come home when the streetlights come on. And
exactly. Mine, too, would say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that was
yeah.
the era that we grew up in, and that era is long, long gone. So I started referring to things through the Wayback Machine. And so in this book, you will find stories of what it was like to grow up in the 60s and 70s. And almost everybody who has read this book has told me that it has then triggered memories of their own childhood and things that they completely forgot about, like the, you know, the bicentennial minute that we had every night.
Oh,
and,
I remember that now.
Yeah, and how, you know, you'd get up and watch cartoons for hours on Saturdays. I don't even think they have cartoons anymore. We had 3 channels of television, and unless you're wearing, you know, aluminum foil pants, you could get, you know, another channel, you know, in D.C. or something. And we
That's
all had
right.
antennas on the roof. And
yeah.
we play baseball and football with 40 kids, and we'd go trick-or-treating for hours. And
yeah,
us
too.
It was
uh-huh.
just a completely different time of life, and you know, mm-hmm. we even had a party line where you
yes,
pick up the
I remember
phone.
A party line.
Yeah, you pick up the phone and you were sharing your phone
People
with
talk.
Another family.
Yep, and our number was Northfield 50874. Isn't that funny?
That's another thing. I remember everybody's phone numbers from growing up. I could not tell you my daughter's cell phone number now, you know, because you just push the name, you know, on your phone and you call them. But it's we grew up in a different life where all that was there, and that's what Missing Pine Park is. And What the title actually means, a lot of people think I'm missing a place called Pine Park. Across the street from our house, we had this wooded area, and it was an ugly, scary wooded area. And I knew that, you know, the Keebler elves and Bigfoot and everything horrible lived there.
Lived in there.
Yes. And one day they came when I was like 6 or 7, and they knocked down all the woods, and they were going to put in a park. Well, at the top of the wooded area, there was one pine tree, and it was about 6 feet tall. So they left this one pine tree, and they cleared everything out. And that fall, at Christmas time, the neighborhood came together, and we decorated the tree. Now, they had not named the park yet, so we put lights and garland and all this stuff, and I remember we ran an extension cord to the Sullivan's house, and from my bedroom window, if I turned my head a certain way, I could see that tree every night, and it was like a glimmer of hope about what was coming in the spring when they were going to put in this park with some playground toys and stuff like this. Well, on Christmas Eve, some guy shows up in a pickup truck with a chainsaw, and he cuts the tree down and steals it, fully decorated, and drives away.
After it was decorated?
Yes, fully decorated.
What would you do?
Well, the next spring, in all their wisdom, Baltimore County came and hammered a big sign in the yard and called it Missing Pine Park.
You are kidding me. Did someone write to the Baltimore County?
Yes.
Right?
And
was it you?
Well, no, but that they knew about it, and that's what became the name of the park. So that is where I grew up. Every crazy event that happened in my life just about happened in Missing Pine Park.
Is it still there, the sign?
It's still there. Yes, the sign is still there.
Wow.
And it's called a tot lot now, and they got some little toys, and it's changed drastically than when it was, because that's where we all played football and baseball and Tin Can Willie and Rita Box and Red Line and, you know, all that stuff. It was all done in Missing Pine Park. So that was the genesis for this book, and it's really taken off. We've actually did an audio version of it as well, and it's getting really, really good reviews. And I'm hoping that if anybody does get it and they go through the Wayback Machine, they'll find a simpler time.
It is a very Wonder Years-like read. But it's hilarious, and you don't. And what I love about your book, Neil, is that you don't have to be like us from Kearney, Maryland, to relate to the book. It's all you have to do is be about our age group, and you can find yourself in that way back time in your own life, because it's so relatable to the times that we were living in the 60s and 70s. So that's what I think. You know, you could be somebody from a whole other state, but there's that Kearney, Maryland. In Arizona, there's that Kearney, Maryland, and, you know, there's Main Street, USA, and those neighborhoods, because it was a simpler time.
It was, and I'm hearing from total strangers in, you know, outskirts of Philadelphia and New York and different areas, even down south, that say, this is exactly like my neighborhood growing up.
Right.
Oh, my gosh, my best friend was just like Fitz, you know, one of the characters
great.
In the book and things like that, and it's it really, really touches a lot of people, and it takes them back. And who
awesome.
Doesn't like to reminisce? Who doesn't like
exactly.
to
yeah,
reminisce
right.
and think about the, you know, the good times, kind of like we're doing right now?
That's right. That's awesome. But where can we find your book?
It's on sale at Amazon, and you can buy it at Kindle and Barnes & Noble. I actually sell it right out of the trunk of my car.
So, like your father, instead of being a chair salesman, you're also a book salesman, right?
This is correct. And all those stories that we talked about are in there.
That's awesome. Well, I can't wait to read the entire book myself. Unfortunately, we only have just a few minutes left of our time. But I just wanted to thank you, Neil, because you're taking the time out of your busy schedule dealing with your Xfinity man.
Oh, my goodness.
House this morning. And, you know, just teaching us all how we can kind of dig deep within ourselves or work out or, you know, think creatively way far beyond the box to create our own personal destiny and market ourselves for success. And I want to quote you from our Parkville yearbook. I don't know if you remember what you wrote in your Parkville yearbook, but I want to quote you.
Okay.
Remember those who touched your lives, for if you take that away, there is nothing to live for. My favorites are baseball, happy people, and just being a crazy guy. And so for as long, Neil, as I've known you, you were always funny, happy, creative, positive, and full of life, and you always, always dared to dream. I never remember an unkind word or negative thought ever from you, and I think that's one of the reasons that you are the successful inspirational speaker, author, and entrepreneur that you are today. So thank you for bringing those insights, making us laugh a little bit, and taking us back to the Wayback Machine, and just sharing some of your personal insights and experiences, putting yourself out there on a daily basis, you know, for people to laugh at and enjoy, and really just to learn from. I think a lot of us, if we just learn not to take ourselves so seriously, we can kind of propel ourselves into that creative realm. Just like you've been able to do. So thank you so much, Neil, for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I couldn't agree more with taking yourself seriously. And I remember real quick one time my mom told me that when I was little and I would do something absolutely crazy and my father would, you know, spank me or whatever it was, she said he would always come into the bathroom later and crack up laughing because of what you did. He had to discipline me because that's what they needed to do, but he was like, oh, my gosh, that was hilarious. You know, can you believe he said I was a lion tamer? You know, that type of stuff. So I took that into consideration when it was time to discipline my own children and thought,
oh,
you know what?
Oh, there you go. Life imitates art, right?
It is, and life is too short, and so, you know, you got to have fun with it.
Yep, you're exactly right. Well, it's almost summertime, folks, and that means the beach sun and sand in your toes. Dig your feet into the cool sand with any one of Neil R. Beller Jr.'s hilarious books, his most recent being the one we just talked about, Missing Pine Park and Cooking Without a Conscience. You can go purchase his books at Amazon.com or cookingwithout.wix.com. If you would like to learn more about Neil's Kit and Caboodle video production company, or you would like to hire them for your next project, please visit their website at kitandcaboodleproductions.com, email them at info@kitandcaboodleproductions.com, or call 410-552-4994. That number again is 410-552-4994. Do you have a medical practice that you're ready to take off to the next level? Check out the Beller Group at www.thebellergroup.com or email info@thebellergroup.com. And to hire Neil as a keynote speaker for your next corporate or special event, email to nbeller@comcast.net. On social media, you can find Neil on his Missing Pine Park Facebook page, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube, respectively. Up to Me Radio will be back in just 2 short weeks, Saturday, May the 14th at 10 a.m., as we take a short break to celebrate our true heroes of inspiration, our mothers. So mark your calendars and meet me here at the Gabby G Cafe. And on behalf of Mel D and myself and the entire cast of Atlanta Life Radio, this is Gabby G saying take 5 this week and be inspired to ask yourself about your own Up to Me moment. Then come back to share it with us, because you know what? It's your life, your moment. It's up to you.
It's up to me to be the very best I can be. And it's up to you to do the same thing too.
Atlanta Life Media.
Again, I say, wake up and live from your sleepless. let's slumber. We can do this no longer. May Afi say, wake up and live. Your life up full of purpose, so work it 'cause you're worthy.
The scriptures say, love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Then why are there so many of our children dying on the street?
You must see that you're worth it.